Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on DPLEX. The content featured in this episode on the role of IP for corporate compliance and sustainability comes from Duncan Mockness Park.
Hello and welcome to another deep dive. We are so glad you are here with us today.
Absolutely. So glad to be here.
I want you to think for a second about the term intellectual property or just IP.
Right.
When you hear those letters, what immediately pops into your head? If you're like most people, you probably picture a team of high-powered corporate lawyers.
Yeah, exactly.
Tall stacks of patent applications, or companies fiercely protecting their latest tech inventions behind closed doors.
The secret sauce.
Right. It is usually all about secrecy, legal battles, and guarding that recipe. But today, we are completely flipping that script. We are looking at IP through a lens you probably never expected.
We are definitely moving far beyond the traditional view of IP as just a defensive legal shield, that is for sure.
Yeah, it's a huge shift. So our mission for this deep dive is to explore a truly fascinating lecture delivered by Duncan M. Park.
Duncan Park, yeah.
And he is the head of IP at TOMR. And just for some context here, TOMR is a global leader in the circular economy.
Which is a massive deal right now.
Huge. If you are familiar with that term, the circular economy is essentially a system designed to eliminate waste and keep resources in constant use.
Right.
Think advanced recycling, resource recovery, basically closing the loop on how we use materials.
Yeah, moving away from that take, make, dispose model.
Exactly. And Park brings 30 years of deep practical experience in the IP profession to the table, specifically focusing on how IP intersects with sustainability.
30 years is a lot of time to see how the industry has or hasn't adapted.
Totally. And the central premise of his lecture is that IP is no longer just a legal safeguard for innovation.
Mm.
Instead, it has evolved into a vital strategic tool that is absolutely necessary for driving corporate sustainability.
Yeah.
And navigating the incredibly complex world of ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues.
What's fascinating here is that we are living in an era defined by intense environmental awareness and increasingly strict regulatory oversight worldwide.
It's not optional anymore.
No, it's really not. Corporations simply cannot treat sustainability as an afterthought anymore. They can't treat it as just a convenient bullet point in a PR brochure.
Slap a green leaf on the logo and call it a day.
Right, the greenwashing approach.
No.
That doesn't fly. It has to be baked deeply into their corporate DNA. And as the lecture so brilliantly argues, intellectual property is actually the hidden linchpin holding that entire sustainable structure together.
The hidden linchpin. I love that phrasing.
Without a strategy for IP, a company's sustainability goals are standing on very shaky ground.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand where we are going, we really need to understand where we came from.
History lesson time.
Just a quick one.
Yeah.
In the lecture, the foundation of this whole discussion is built on the evolution of corporate governance and compliance.
Yes.
And compliance is basically the framework through which a company is managed and regulated. It's the responsibilities, the accountability, the decision-making processes guiding everything the organization does.
The internal rule book.
Right. But the lecture points to specific historical catalysts that forced this framework to evolve, specifically mentioning massive industry failings like the Enron scandal.
Oh, Enron.
And the 2008 financial crisis.
Yeah.
I mean, think back to those days. Corporate promises were often just a glossy annual report with a picture of a tree on the cover, right?
They really were. And those events were crucial turning points. Before those crises, corporate compliance was largely seen as a financial tick box exercise.
Did the numbers add up?
Exactly. You made sure the math was correct, you filed the right paperwork, and you moved on.
Right.
But those catastrophes exposed a sweeping lack of oversight. They forced the business world to build incredibly robust governance structures that demanded real transparency.
Transparency and accountability.
Along with strict checks and balances. The focus shifted from merely balancing the ledger to ensuring the entire culture and operation of the company was ethical and accountable.
So it wasn't just about accountability to the people holding the purse strings anymore.
Not at all. And that brings us to the modern shift. Compliance has evolved from simply following financial rules to balancing the varied and sometimes competing interests of an extensive web of stakeholders.
It's not just the shareholders in the boardroom.
No, we are talking about shareholders, of course, but also employees, suppliers, customers, governments, and the local communities where these companies operate.
That's a massive web to manage.
It is. Crucially, the lecture points out that sustainability and climate-related risks are no longer optional nice-to-haves in corporate reporting. They are mandatory components.
Yeah.
A business now has to mathematically and scientifically prove it is operating responsibly.
I want you, the listener, to think about your own workplace right now, or even just the brands you buy from every single day. How transparent are they really being about their environmental impact?
It's a great question to ask.
If you dig into their corporate reports, are they actually disclosing their climate risks, or are they just using a lot of green imagery on their packaging? Because according to this lecture, the days of hiding behind vague promises are ending.
They're over.
And the rules governing this are getting incredibly specific.
The rules are being codified globally. And they are rigorous. That massive shift in accountability makes a lot more sense when you look at the rule book the lecture focuses on as the gold standard for this new era.
Yes, the OECD guidelines.
The big one.
The lecture treats the OECD guidelines for multinational enterprises on responsible business conduct as essentially the ultimate playbook for modern companies.
It is the playbook.
And for those who might not know, the OECD stands for the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's an international coalition that sets global economic and social standards.
Right.
When I was going through the lecture, the scope of these guidelines really blew me away. They cover 9 distinct pillars that touch every single aspect of a business.
It is an exhaustive framework. It is designed to ensure that multinational enterprises operate in harmony with the government policies. Ultimately, to strengthen the basis of mutual confidence between enterprises and the societies in which they operate.
Now, instead of rattling off all 9 pillars, let's look at a couple that really show this shift in what companies are now responsible for.
Good idea.
First, there is disclosure and transparency. This means you have to openly share information about your impact on society and the environment just to maintain your basic license to operate.
You can't operate in the shadows.
Exactly. Then there is human rights, which mandates supply chain due diligence to ensure fair treatment and eliminate forced labor. You also have environmental protection, demanding companies minimize pollution and conserve resources.
It's a huge shift in perspective.
It's an enormous checklist that forces a company to look outward, not just inward.
And what we really need to focus on is the 2023 update to these guidelines, which the lecture draws special attention to.
Yes, the 2023 update was massive.
The 2023 update fundamentally changed the game by explicitly extending due diligence requirements to environmental impacts, specifically calling out climate change and biodiversity, and critically to technological considerations.
Wait, so technology is no longer just viewed as a neutral tool by these regulatory bodies?
Not anymore. This raises an important question regarding technology due diligence. The updated guidelines specifically focus on the responsibilities companies have when developing, financing, selling, licensing, and trading technology.
That covers basically the entire life cycle of a piece of tech.
It does. This encompasses major issues like data management, ensuring the protection of at-risk groups from technological harm, and disclosing how the technology might impact responsible business conduct.
How does that actually play out in real life? It sounds a bit abstract.
Think about a company developing an AI-driven data scraping tool meant to optimize shipping routes.
Okay, sounds fairly standard.
Right. Under the old rules, the company might say, hey, we just built the software. We aren't responsible for how our clients use it.
Wash their hands of it.
Exactly. But under the 2023 OECD guidelines, that company has to perform due diligence. If that tool is used by a client to exploit labor loopholes, or if the data centers powering the AI are causing severe environmental degradation, the company that developed and licensed the technology bears a level of responsibility.
Wow.
It completely changes the liability a company takes on when creating or sharing new digital tools.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because we're finally colliding this sweeping compliance rulebook directly with intellectual property.
The main event.
The lecture introduces a concept that shifts the entire goalpost for corporate success, the triple bottom line.
Yes.
Traditionally, businesses operated on a single bottom line profit. Did we make money? But the new value system demands they balance people, planet, and profit. It requires a fundamental reevaluation of how a company creates value. Can you walk us through what that paradigm shift actually looks like for a legacy corporation?
I like to think of it like this. Imagine a corporation is a sprawling cargo ship that has spent a century running on cheap, dirty coal, optimizing only for one thing, speed.
Okay, got the picture.
Now, while still crossing the ocean, The crew has to completely swap out the engine for a zero-emission system. They have to ensure the crew is treated perfectly, guarantee they don't disturb the marine life along their route, and somehow still deliver the cargo on time and make a profit.
That sounds like an impossible engineering feat. How do they actually navigate that pivot without sinking?
To navigate this pivot, to actually implement these new business ecosystems, companies need relentless innovation, and they need to adopt new enabling technologies.
New engines.
Right. That is where intellectual property becomes the central nervous system of the operation. To manage this effectively, the lecture introduces a highly process-oriented approach called the Plan-Do-Check-Act cycle.
I love a good framework. But how does that cycle apply to managing IP for sustainability in a practical sense?
It is a continuous loop designed to help companies analyze and manage their IP within this new reality. Let's say a beverage company wants to invent a new, fully biodegradable bottle.
A great initiative.
Plan involves setting that sustainability goal and identifying what IP is needed to achieve it. Do they need to file new patents for the material? Do they need to protect the manufacturing process as a trade secret?
Figuring out the IP puzzle before they even start.
Exactly. Do is implementing those new processes and filing the actual IP protections. Check requires monitoring the results against evolving ESG legislation and technical standards. Are the bottles actually biodegrading at the rate claimed?
You have to prove it.
And ACT is refining the strategy based on what was learned, maybe tweaking the patent or updating the trade secret.
So it takes IP out of the legal department and puts it right into the operational workflow.
Exactly. It's a living, breathing process.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focus topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
The lecture also notes that a practical way companies are formalizing these rules is right inside their corporate code of conduct. Now, usually the code of conduct is just that document you sign on your first day of work, promising not to steal office supplies or harass your coworkers.
It has become a far more powerful instrument than that. A modern code of conduct now outlines strict business principles, not just for employees, but for external suppliers and partners.
So it extends outside the building?
Yes. It includes integrity due diligence procedures. Think about employee offboarding or supplier onboarding in a circular economy. These are critical vulnerability points.
Because data is moving.
Right. The lecture stresses that IP issues, like how to manage IP rights, how to handle confidential information, trade secrets, and ensuring strict data security, must be directly integrated into these policies. Because if your supplier accidentally leaks the proprietary data you are using to track your carbon offset, your entire sustainability claim falls apart.
Which brings us to perhaps the biggest tension in the entire lecture. This fascinated me.
It's the core conflict.
It is the clash between traditional IP strategy, which is historically all about secrecy and locking things down, and the demands of modern sustainability, which heavily relies on open innovation. The argument is that if a company wants to hit its sustainability targets, it cannot operate in a vacuum. Achieving these sprawling ESG goals requires companies to collaborate and share highly sensitive sustainability data with external stakeholders, with suppliers up and down the chain, and even form large industry consortiums.
It is a profound paradox. The very nature of a circular economy means materials and data have to flow freely between different entities.
You can't close the loop if you don't talk to each other.
You have to share information about the chemical makeup or the life cycle of a product so the next company in the chain can recycle it efficiently. This collaborative approach is going to heavily influence the application of new enabling technologies.
But the friction.
The friction happens when you ask, how do you identify and capture the value of your intangible assets? Your IP, when you are openly sharing data in these complex integrated ecosystems.
It sounds like an absolute minefield. If you are sharing data to save the planet, but losing control of your IP, you are exposing the company to existential threats. Let's talk about threats, starting with the one that makes headlines almost every week.
Greenwashing.
Greenwashing. This is the ultimate reputational risk. Greenwashing is when a company makes misleading, exaggerated, or entirely unsubstantiated claims about the environmental benefits of their product, their service, or their overall operations.
And we should distinguish here between accidental greenwashing, where a company just has poor data management, and malicious greenwashing, which is just outright marketing lies.
Both are terrible.
Both are dangerous.
Right. The lecture points out that this is a severe threat to a brand. If you overcommit to social initiatives and fail to deliver, or if you slap an eco-friendly label on a product without the proprietary data to back it up, it destroys customer trust.
The damage doesn't stop at the marketing department either. It damages the brand's fundamental association with quality and innovation.
It taints everything.
It really does. But beyond the bad PR, there are severe regulatory and litigation risks. Greenwashing is no longer just an ethical misstep. It is a legally actionable offense.
The courts are getting involved.
If your IP and data don't actually support your environmental claims, you invite lawsuits. And the lecture emphasizes that these lawsuits aren't just coming from government regulators anymore.
Who else is suing?
They're coming from a wide range of claimants. Consumers, investors, environmental advocacy groups, and even competitors who feel they are losing market share to false claims.
So anyone can take a swing at you if your data doesn't match your promises.
Very much.
And speaking of data, let's talk about the operational risks. We just discussed how open innovation and collaboration across the value chain are necessary for sustainability. But the moment you start integrating your internal systems with third-party suppliers and partners to track, say, a product's carbon footprint, your cybersecurity risks absolutely skyrocket.
The irony is quite sharp. In an attempt to be open and green, a company could easily suffer data loss, corruption, or catastrophic breaches.
Because there are more doors into the network.
Exactly. By opening the doors to share sustainability metrics, you might accidentally leave the vault containing your most valuable trade secrets unlocked.
To make that concrete, Imagine a famous shoe brand sharing its proprietary eco-friendly manufacturing data with an overseas supplier just to prove to regulators that their carbon offset is legitimate.
Sounds like a standard compliance move.
Right. But if that supplier's servers get hacked, the shoe brand hasn't just suffered a minor PR crisis. They have literally lost the secret recipe to their most valuable product. They could lose ownership of critical IP assets just because of a vulnerability in a partner's network.
That is a terrifying scenario from a corporate governance perspective.
It's a nightmare.
And if you lose that IP, or if you simply fail to understand how IP functions in these new sustainable ecosystems, you hit the final major threat: financial risk.
Bottom line.
The lecture argues that if a company doesn't grasp this dynamic, they will be entirely unable to demonstrate the added value of their IP to investors. They won't secure a return on their investment.
Investors want to see that structural soundness.
They demand it. It leads to the ineffective use of their assets and ultimately a loss of investment value. If your IP strategy isn't tightly aligned with your ESG strategy, your investors will eventually walk away.
So we have reputational destruction, sprawling lawsuits, catastrophic cyber breaches, and financial ruin.
Sounds bleak.
How on earth does the lecture suggest companies survive this minefield?
The defense strategy outlined comes back to the foundation of our entire discussion: good governance.
Going back to the basics.
It requires transparent disclosure and relentless due diligence. You cannot just audit your own internal IP and data management processes. You have to rigorously review the internal processes of your third-party partners.
You have to vet everyone you talk to.
Before you share any data, before you enter into that open innovation space, you have to ensure their cybersecurity and IP management protocols are as strict as your own.
So what does this all mean? When we take a step back and look at the entirety of Duncan Park's lecture, the core thesis becomes incredibly clear. Managing IP risk is no longer just a chore for the legal department to handle in the basement.
Definitely not.
It is the invisible shield protecting a company and simultaneously the engine driving its sustainable future. By proactively managing these specific IP risks, by ensuring data is genuinely secure, that environmental claims are backed by solid proprietary evidence, and that external collaborations are structurally sound businesses, secure their long-term survival in an environmentally conscious world.
It's the only way forward.
Without that rigorous IP management, the whole ESG effort collapses into empty promises.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is incredibly relevant to you, the listener, in your everyday life.
How so?
Whether you are evaluating a potential employer, deciding which stocks to invest in, or simply choosing which brands to buy from at the grocery store, you can apply this lens.
Looking past the packaging.
Look beyond the clever marketing campaigns. Look at how a company treats its intellectual property, its data transparency, and its collaborative ecosystems. How they manage those intangible assets will reveal how serious they truly are about their ESG commitments.
That's a great point.
It separates the companies doing the hard, structural work from the ones just riding the green wave.
It is a vastly different way to evaluate the corporate world, and honestly, a much more effective one. As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to chew on.
I'm ready.
We have talked a lot about how collaboration and open innovation are strictly necessary to solve major global challenges like climate change. We need the best minds and the best data working together across industries.
We can't solve it alone.
But if that is true, will the corporate world eventually reach a breaking point? Will major companies someday have to make a definitive choice between hoarding their most valuable, profitable trade secrets and actually sharing them to save the planet?
It is a profound question. Can the traditional model of secrecy truly coexist with the urgent, collaborative need for global environmental salvation?
Something to think about the next time you hear a company talk about their green initiatives. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into IP and corporate sustainability. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.